Welcome to the Nexus Podcast. The word Nexus means a connected group. And when it comes to church leadership, we're better together. No one should have to choose between developing themselves and developing their church. The Nexus Podcast by Christ Fellowship is all about having real conversations that equip and resource you to grow and develop the best versions of yourself, your team, and your church. So let's lean in.
Hey, welcome to the Nexus Podcast. I'm your host, James Duvall. Today, we're wrapping up season one of the podcast. We're so excited about some changes and new additions to the podcast for season two. So we want you to stay tuned for the coming season. But today, we have our good friend, Pastor Lance Witt. Lance has 35 years experience as a senior leader and pastor. He is also a strategic consultant with churches and a life plan coach. He is the author of three books, Replenish, High Impact Teams, and his newest book, Your One Life, Own It, Live It, and Love It. Lance is the founder of Replenish, a ministry completely devoted to helping individuals live and lead from a healthy soul and helping teams and organizations become healthy and high performing. Lance has been a friend and mentor for a long time. There is so much gold in this episode, so let's jump in. Well, Lance, I'm really excited and grateful to have you on the podcast today.
Well, thanks, James. I love being with you, and I can't wait for us to dive into some of the questions.
Awesome. Well, I know it's a personal passion for you to invest in pastors and leaders, so without doubt, you're going to help some listeners today in their becoming their best version of themselves, leading their teams, and actually leading the church forward. So I want to dive into this topic of personal development, and you become known as the pastor to pastors. So many ministries and churches have been impacted by your heart to help leaders invest in soul care. Christ Fellowship and myself personally benefiting from your teaching and your leadership. So can you share about how this became a passion for you in your life?
Yeah, I mean, really, the honest truth is this became a passion for me out of my own pain, out of a lot of my own mistakes, lack of understanding about the importance of your soul and that your soul is actually something that need to be cared for and tended to and nurtured. And so as a type A driven sort of workaholic, in my years when I was out at Saddleback Church, my life was just out of control. I mean, the pace was crazy, the pressure was off the charts, and I just ended up in a pretty unhealthy place. And again, it's a long story, but after 7 years, stepped away. And I remember just this feeling like I didn't just want a different way of ministry. I needed a different way of life. And I would say the last 15 years have been me trying to understand how to bring my own soul back to life. So that journey is a very personal one for me and is filled with a lot of pain, but now a lot of joy and delight in the life that I get to live. So
awesome. And that has turned into Replenish, an organization where you're actually doing a lot of coaching with teams and with pastors. You've also written three fantastic books. Your first one is Replenish. You did a book completely on teams, high impact teams, and then your brand new book, Your One Life. So could you just quickly give us just an overview of the why behind each one of those books?
Yeah, I would say Replenish was very early on my own very raw journey in the area of soul care. And I would describe Replenish as sort of my early thoughts on like, what does it look like to actually do life from a healthy soul? And it felt like a raw kind of experience where I was just exposing a lot of my own questions and issues in my own life. But the mantra of Replenish is really, we want to help people live well and then lead well and do that from a healthy soul. So that's kind of been the focus of that. It's really a book to leaders. The second book was really written to not only help teams figure out how to have healthy teams, but also how to have high performing teams. And I believe the synergy happens when we actually go hard after both. And I think if you're a leader, you don't really have the option of going, hey, we're just going to be healthy and get along and be nice to each other, but really not get anything done. And you don't really have the option of also going, you know, hey, we're going to be all about goals and ministry objectives, but not really create health. I think you got to go hard after both. And so that's why I wrote that book. And then the third one, really in many ways, James, is really my life message. You know, as someone who is now in my sixth decade of life, as I think back over my life and look over my shoulder to my kids, my grandkids, Your One Life is really the message I would like them to have to really be able to steward well the one and only life that they're ever going to get. And so that's kind of the thrust of the most recent book.
Yeah. And I love that each one of the books have this consistent theme of healthy soul.
Yeah.
Like you really can't have a healthy team as a leader if you don't have a healthy soul. And so I love that piece. In your newest book, which I've read all your stuff and I love it all. And I really believe Your One Life is a fantastic book. And so any listener who hasn't picked it up needs to get that and just apply the principles there. But you lay out this idea of a life manifesto in that book. Can you talk a little bit about what a life manifesto is?
Yeah. So kind of there's really only two exercises I try to lead people through in the book, trying not to overwhelm people. But the first one is to create a life purpose statement. And I would kind of define that as the true north of your life. And the life manifesto is sort of one layer down to kind of say, now, what are the underpinnings or the key values that you're going to build your life on? So I always use the illustration of a trellis. A trellis is a structure on which a vine can grow. And so a life manifesto is like a trellis upon which a beautiful life can grow. Mm. And so it's sort of you putting the stake in the ground with some key values and principles that you are going to anchor your life to. And that if you could live that kind of life, like you would live a life that was well worth living.
That's awesome. Can you share a little bit of your life manifesto? What that looks like?
Yeah, it's a set of statements and it's changed and morphed over the years. I've added a couple, I've wordsmithed different ones. It's a pretty big deal in my life, honestly. And most of those statements are very personal and they also come somewhat out of my story. So for example, one of my statements in my life manifesto is that Connie will be my best friend and that I will be a cheerleader in her life.
I love that.
Well, that comes out of a lot of years of probably not really accurately understanding, you know, how to be a spiritual leader in my home and to really be a champion for her individuality. And I think often she sort of lost her individuality in my ministry. And so part of what I'm deeply committed to in these days is that I want to be a champion for her and cheerlead her exactly that she could be exactly who God made her to be. So that's a big, important one to me. Another one is that I'm going to relentlessly pursue the practice of Sabbath. As a type A driven person who's lived my life compulsively busy, I have learned the value of rhythm and this rhythm of work hard, but rest well. And so just relentlessly pursuing this rhythm of 1 in 7 that God has for all of us as the way to live a healthy life. Another one, again, comes out of a bit of a pain point is that I often feel like one of the regrets I have is that early on in my ministry years, I was so consumed with building the church and being a pastor that I really wasn't present and available sometimes for Connie and the kids. And so one of my life manifesto statements is that I want to be an available grandfather and invest in the spiritual development of my kids and grandkids. And so those have been just like big anchor rocks for me to go. And as I regularly review that to go, hey, am I living that kind of life? And does how I'm spending my time reflect those values? So hopefully that gives you a taste of what's in there.
That's awesome. As you're sharing that, I know one of the things that I think you do on an annual basis is Cousin Camp.
Yes.
So did Cousin Camp come out of that manifesto?
Absolutely.
Can you tell a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we have 4 granddaughters and 2 of them are 9 and 2 of them are 7. So my kids had kids almost at the same time. And so Connie and I just committed that every year we would take the 4 girls away for a week of Cousin Camp. And then my kids, actually the 4 of them, and there's the 2 kids and their spouses go on vacation together. So
that's awesome.
My kids look forward to Cousin Camp probably more than the granddaughters. But yeah, we just nailed down our flights and a place to stay. We're taking them to Branson, Missouri this year. It's just one of the highlights of our year to just spend that dedicated time with them, creating great memories and investing in them.
That's fantastic. You know, you mentioned about Sabbath and that you are very dedicated to practicing Sabbath. And I do think for ministry leaders, pastors, I think you would agree that many pastors don't actually practice Sabbath.
I'd say that's probably an understatement.
Yeah. And I was recently with you as you were teaching a bunch of pastors and you were sharing some trends and statistics you're seeing about ministry leaders, clergy,
Can you share some of that and some of the things that you're seeing and how that maybe plays into this idea of taking care of the soul?
Yeah. You know, James, I've been at this a long time. I've been in ministry now more than 45 years. And I would say the last 2 years have by far and away been the most complex, complicated time in which to lead in the church, certainly during my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And so I think every pastor feels it. And of course, now some of the statistics are beginning to bear that out. I recently read an article in the Wall Street Journal that talked about an exodus of clergy, and that there is sort of a tsunami of clergy that, if not already leaving, are thinking about quitting ministry. So a recent Barna statistic said that 38% of pastors are seriously considering quitting ministry. And by the way, that's up 9% just from a few months earlier in early 2021.
Wow.
Now, that's a bad statistic, but one that's maybe even a little more alarming is that for those people in ministry under age 45, 46% are seriously thinking about walking away. And then sort of a cultural mirror to hold up for us is that 40% of Americans would say that clergy are ethical and honest. We scored just above journalists.
Wow.
And so I think that gives you a picture of sort of where we're at in the culture as it relates to people in ministry, people not being healthy. And you know, for me, I think if there's ever a moment when this message of soul care was needed, it is right now. Because I think unless you're really healthy, like living from that place where you're loving Jesus, you have a good marriage, you're deeply entrenched in your call, you're rested, that's the only place where you're going to do healthy ministry, because there is so much right now that just drains the life out of pastors. So, you know, one of the principles I use a lot in Replenish is self-care is not selfish, it's good stewardship.
So good.
And I wish I had learned that earlier in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I think even if you look at where culture is right now, post-pandemic or kind of mid-pandemic, wherever you kind of see that, I talk to a lot of pastors who are just tired.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, you know, a lot of ministry leaders and probably leaders who are even listening to this podcast, they had to pivot so quickly from one type of ministry to another type of ministry back to physical ministry. And, you know, I wonder what you're seeing maybe if that has a lot to do potentially with some of the statistics that unlike other seasons, maybe it feels like there's just a fatigue that's come across ministry leaders.
Yeah. And I think it's helpful to distinguish between being tired and being depleted.
Yeah.
I think when you're tired, a good weekend away, a good Sabbath sort of restores you. But I feel like pastors have now been depleted, like so many pivots, so much criticism, so much back and forth, people leaving the church, you know, in-person services, online services. And so I think it's just left pastors depleted. And what I've discovered about being depleted is you can't get a quick charge and get back to where you need to be.
Yeah.
It has to be a slow charge. And so that's why I think ongoing, daily, weekly, self-care, putting things in your life that are life-giving to you, that fill your tank, are critical if you're going to stay in this over the long haul.
That's so good. So I wanted to turn the corner a little bit from kind of personal leadership to team leadership. I mean, you've written a great book, High Impact Teams, but can you talk a little bit about some of the importance of or how to craft a leadership culture, a healthy leadership culture?
Yeah, and I do think this is certainly more art than science, and there's not just one, you know, formula for doing it. But I think one I would just want to point out, like, hey, your leadership culture really is the most important culture within your church, right? And a lot of times I get asked in Replenish, like, how would you actually know if a church is healthy? And I go, well, first off, I know it's not because of how big it is, how fast it's growing, or what's happening on the platform. Yeah. If I was going to go one place to really examine the health of a church, I would go to its leadership environment.
Okay.
So senior leadership, staff environment. And I think as pastors, you have to be intentional. So again, I think every pastor will get this. You're standing on a platform and the spotlight is on you and you've got a crowd in front of you. The people that it's easiest for you to overlook are the people on the front rows. Mm. And I think you sort of look over their heads out to the people in the audience. And I think as pastors, sometimes when it comes to healthy culture in our teams, we're so busy prepping sermons to, and we sort of look, unintentionally look over the heads of our staff out to the congregation, and we're missing the opportunity to really create a healthy leadership culture. So again, some of this is going to sound like Christianity 101, but I would go, hey, to have a healthy leadership culture, you guys just need to open the word together and pray together.
Yeah.
You can't assume that people on your team are spiritually healthy or that they're spiritually thriving. I get to have a lot of personal conversations with leaders. And when you really press in, I would say they describe their spiritual life as sort of mundane, stuck, routine, mechanical. And so I think you want to create a catalyst within your church staff leadership culture where you're opening the word, where you're bringing spiritual disciplines into the rhythm of your team life. Well, I'll just mention one other. There's so many. We could spend forever on this with you and I. But I think another one is you've got to learn how to have uncomfortable conversations if you want a healthy culture. And I think churches, we got to just be honest. We suck at this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think churches suffer from what I often refer to as terminal niceness.
Yeah.
Like, right? We're polite. We are kind. We are diplomatic. But often, you know, you get outside the meeting and in the hallway or in the private conversation, it's the church version of trash talking that takes place. And it's because we haven't learned the skill of leaning in to have hard and uncomfortable conversations. And I know in my own ministry, I've created a ton of dysfunction in our team culture because I wasn't willing to sit down and have an adult, grown-up, mature, uncomfortable conversation about some hard stuff.
Yeah, that's true. One of the things I teach a lot here with the team is the idea of a liberating culture is that it's the balance, the calibrating of support and challenge.
Right.
And so many leaders try to protect or they're afraid of having hard conversations so they become protectors. And it, instead of actually bringing the right amount of challenge,
yes,
or confrontation and support at the same time to actually have health and actually empower and give opportunity to leaders. So,
and I think one, let me just add one thing. I think one thing that is true for a lot of leaders is we are more shepherd than maybe anything else. And so when you're a shepherd, I think it is hard to lean in. And here's a mantra that I've sort of used for my own life. It is possible to be both kind and clear.
Yeah.
And often in my people-pleasing attempt to always be kind, I haven't really addressed issues clearly and directly. And I just think we have to get better at this. And I'm hopeful. I think churches are getting better. There's some good resources and training out there. But we have to get better if we're going to have healthy cultures.
Yeah. As you're saying that being kind and clear, I think one of the things that probably goes along with that is being consistent.
Absolutely.
You know, if you 100%. Want to have a healthy culture, you need to have consistent leadership. So let me turn the question around a little bit on healthy culture. What are some signs that culture is becoming unhealthy?
Yeah. I guess the first one that comes to my mind is defensiveness by those in higher levels of leadership in the organization. And often that defensiveness is rooted in insecurity. And so, you know, it can show up in things like, hey, when a problem is brought to a leader or they're confronted with something, they shut the conversation down. They bully up. They use their power to shut it down. And then, you know, people just turtle up. And so I think that's one of the most common things I see is lack of self-awareness and lack of emotional health in a leader that creates unhealthy kinds of things. I think another one is just, again, sort of an unsustainable pace, right? Where we want to get a lot done and what we do matters. And so, man, we just go hard and we go hard all the time. And in ministry, you know, our work's never done. It's not a 9-to-5 kind of job. And so I think, you know, just sort of an unsustainable pace where we sort of unintentionally grind through people and we don't value the life that they have outside of the church. And I remember, I think it was Andy Stanley who I first heard say this, that what we want our staff to feel is not what we want from them, but what we want for them.
Yeah.
And I think when it's unhealthy, what staff feel is like, hey, I'm just a tool, and this is a utilitarian culture where the only value I have is what I can produce.
Yeah.
Rather than no, I actually care about your marriage.
Yeah.
I care about your kids. I care about your physical health. And we see the whole person, not just what you can get done.
Yeah. And for type A personalities, that's hard to slow down to actually care. I mean, we care, but like I'm a type A personality, I care, but it's sometimes I have to be very intentional to slow down and really lean in to those relational conversations and so forth. So you talked about just the pace of leadership and pace of leading. And I think culture is kind of addicted to urgency anyways, right? But in your book, Your One Life, you have a chapter that's entitled, What's the Big Hurry?
Yeah.
And you have this challenge in there to choose slow. So Can you talk a little bit about that and why that's so important for leaders and leading their teams?
Yeah, I think one, slow creates space and time and presence. And one of the things that I kind of came out of my sabbatical with is just this whole idea that frantic and deep don't go together and hurry and presence don't go together. And so I think if you look at the model of Jesus, who, now think about how much slower his culture was than ours, right?
Yeah.
Not 24/7 technology, not all the stuff that we have that is the white noise of our culture, right? And still, even in that much slower culture, the Bible talks about Jesus regularly pulling away, slowing down, creating space in his life to be with the Father. So one of my favorite moments of this is in Mark chapter 1, verse 35, where Jesus has this incredibly busy day of ministry. So think about this. He's the guest speaker as the rabbi in a local synagogue. He casts out demons and heals people during church. That feels pretty intense. He goes over to Peter's house for lunch afterwards. He heals Peter's mother-in-law. And then the Bible says, before his day was done, they brought everybody in town who was sick and demon-possessed to his door. I'm going, oh my gosh, that is such a draining day of ministry. The very next verse says, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up and left to go to a solitary place.
Yeah.
Not to go do more ministry, but to be alone. Now, here's a guy who has only 3 years to do public ministry, and he still takes time to slow down and create space. And I just challenge anybody to go through the Gospels and find a time when Jesus is preoccupied, when he's looking past someone, when he's in a hurry and just doesn't notice. No, I mean, he was the consummate noticer of people. And I just don't think you can do that without learning to slow down. And man, I could go on forever.
Yeah.
Let me just make one other statement.
Yeah, please.
I think this issue of slowing is both internal and external. So external is you have to arrange your priorities and your schedule so that you actually can slow down and create space and practice something like Sabbath. But there's also the internal journey of learning to slow your soul down. Because when I first started practicing Sabbath, I hated it because internally I was still redlining and my RPMs were just out of control. And so I think you have to give yourself some time to learn how to slow down, not just only in your schedule and calendar, but actually in the pace of your own soul.
I love that. I love that. So good. You know, many people who are listening to this podcast are leading congregations, leading churches and so forth. So there's a huge battle today with culture and conforming the culture and pastors having to lead through some really tough issues with culture. So I'm interested if you have, from your experience, what encouragement you can give the pastors and leaders listening today as they see members face these issues. And do you have any practical advice that you can offer pastors as a minister to people in their care?
Yeah, I think, gosh, so many things run through my mind about kind of how pastors can respond. And again, I would say, first off, I know that as a pastor, I need to stay filled up, connected to Jesus, because if I don't, I'm not going to respond in the right way to people. I know that when I'm empty, I'm more irritable, I'm less patient. And if there was ever a time when people need to be shepherded to the right place, it's right now. They're lost, they're confused. And it helps me, James, to remember that behind a lot of the anger that is in our culture today, it's a bunch of scared little kids.
Yeah.
And if I can see them as that, it just brings out the shepherd and the tenderness in me. And so I think, you know, we've got to really put on our shepherd hat first, and then our leader hat. The other thing I think that COVID exposed is just how shallow and immature a lot of Christians are, and even a lot of Christian leaders. And so I think we have to go back and go, okay, maybe we haven't done as great a job at actually really discipling people and helping them think biblically and respond biblically rather than politically or angrily. And so I think to go back and go, how do we create more of a catechism where we're actually training people that if they gave us 3, 4, 5 years of their life, we could actually help them think differently than they tend to think now. Yeah. So I think it's a call back to some basics in my mind, if we could help pastors with.
That's so good. Man, there's so much content here, and I could go on. We could talk about this stuff forever. So,
for sure.
But we have to wrap it up, so okay. I want to ask you one last question. So you are the soul health teacher. I mean, you're, in my opinion, kind of the expert on Sabbath. So I'd love to know, what's your rhythm look like, or what's your favorite way to Sabbath?
Okay. All right. Let me, before we get to the practical part of that, I would just say the very first thing that you have to do is you need a theological, biblical conviction about this being a command.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, I don't think you stand a chance of really implementing this in your life. And then I would say, get it on your schedule. You want a Sabbath? Well, get it. Get a rhythm of 1 and 7. So I don't get to Sabbath the same day every week because I travel so much.
Yep.
But I have a rhythm of 1 and 7. And the biggest thing that helps me is getting it on my calendar. And now, because I've been doing this a while, when I see Sabbath coming, it's like the carrot on the end of the stick of a busy, stressful week. And I know, like, I can make it because Sabbath is coming. And then when I do Sabbath, like, I'm always up the first one at our house. So there's two things I do to start every Sabbath. I turn on the coffee pot because I know I can't even be a Christian without my coffee. And then the second thing I do is we light a candle and we put it on our island. And it's a reminder to us today that, like, today is a different day. It's not a day for being productive or email or chores. It's a day that is about rest and delight and worship and being together. And so I start my day often with just kind of an extended time in the Word. Maybe some worship music. I love to sit and read for a little while. I love having our family around. But even whatever we do during the day, we try not to make it where it feels like a lot of obligation and work.
Right.
So keep it simple. And then, you know, when I can, I like to do something that's life-giving and fun, whether it's getting out on my bike or, you know, maybe golfing a little bit or a lunch with a friend. But it's a day that really is about just refilling my tank.
That's awesome. That's awesome. One follow-up question with that. You mentioned that you light a candle.
Yeah.
And I think it was John Mark Comer in his book that talks about they light a candle. So where does that come from?
Yeah, at least for us, it comes from a Jewish practice called Havdalah. So Havdalah is that when Sabbath starts, you light a candle, and it is to be your reminder today that it's not about being productive. You can slow down, you can rest. And so it's to remind you, like, hey, this is not like the other 6 days. Mm-hmm. At the end of the 24 hours, you extinguish the candle in a cup of wine, and then you pour some of the wine into the saucer, into a saucer. And the symbolism is this, that if you will do Sabbath well, it will spill over into the other 6 days, and you'll be a better person the other 6 days of the week because you practice Sabbath on the seventh.
Amazing. Amazing.
I love that.
I love that. It's so beautiful. Well, this has been fantastic. Lance, if people wanted to follow you or connect with you online, where would you send them?
Yeah, my website is just lance@replenish.net. And then in Twitter or Instagram, it's lance_wit is the easiest way to get to me.
Awesome. We'll post all those on the show notes. Thank you so much, my friend. And we need to do this again.
Yeah, I appreciate you, James. You're a good friend.
Awesome.
Thanks, my friend.
Thanks for listening to the Nexus Podcast. For additional resources and show notes from today's episode, check out our website, nexusplatform.com. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, share with a friend, and leave us a comment below. We hope these conversations left you feeling equipped and resourced as you grow and develop the best versions of yourself, your team, and your church.